a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
We are at the appointed hour. I will call the Public Utilities Commission to order. This is Vice Chairman Chris Nelson. I'll be running the meeting today. We have Chairman Hansen and Commissioner Feagin on the line, along with a number of other participants. We're going to go through the agenda today pretty much in order. And we're going to start with administration approval of the minutes of the hearing and commission meeting on December 17th. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. The minutes are approved. We will move to consumer reports. Deb Gregg.
Thank you, Vice Chairman Nelson. The Commission received a total of 77 contacts since the last report was prepared for the December 17, 2013 Commission meeting. Seven of the contacts involved telecommunication service, 22 of the contacts involved electric service, 8 of the contacts involved natural gas service, 1 contact involved gas and electric service, 4 contacts involved cell phone service, 21 contacts related to the Do Not Call registry, and 14 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 1,841 of the 1,860 complaints received in 2013 have been resolved, and 13 of the 20 complaints received in 2014 have been resolved.
Thank you. Questions from the Commission? Hearing none. Thank you, Deb. Okay, we will move into the rest of the agenda. The first electric item, EL 13-036, in the matter of the application of Black Hills Power, Inc. for approval of deferred accounting for costs incurred due to Winter Storm Atlas damage and to transfer the remaining plant balance for the soon-to-be-decommissioned Neil Simpson 1, Osage, and Ben French plants to a regulatory asset. And for the commissioners on the line, we do have four representatives here from Black Hills, and they have a presentation for us that I know was emailed out to you. Hopefully you picked that up this morning and can follow that along. With that, I will turn it over to Black Hills, whoever wants to approach. All, for the record, all four have approached. This is beginning to look serious.
Good morning. My name is Amy Koenig, Corporate Counsel for Black Hills Corporation. I'm appearing today on behalf of Black Hills Power with respect to its application for approval of deferred accounting. The purpose of the application is twofold. First, it is to create an accounting order to accommodate the costs incurred due to Winter Storm Atlas damage. And the second purpose is to transfer the remaining plant balance for the soon-to-be-decommissioned Neil Simpson 1, Osage, and Ben French plants to a regulatory asset. I have three additional representatives of Black Hills Power with me today. The first is Chris Kilpatrick, the Director of Rates, Mike Tice, Director of Operations, and Vance Crocker, Vice President of Electric Operations. With the Commission's permission, Mr. Crocker will provide a presentation regarding Winter Storm Atlas, and then Mr. Kilpatrick will provide a presentation regarding the decommissioning topic.
Please proceed.
Good morning, commissioners and staff. Before I start off, I just would like to say that, you know, we were involved, as maybe some of you were here, in the winter storm. It impacted a lot of people across South Dakota, specifically western South Dakota. And one thing I really noticed about South Dakotans, and I'm fresh back after about, you know, after being gone for a couple of years, but back into South Dakota, it feels good to watch a community really come together for the outage, whether it was with the hard-hit folks with the cattle, or whether it was a lot of the impacts to, you know, infrastructure and else. So good to be back and good to really see a community and state come together. I'm going to move forward here on the agenda. Essentially, it's going to be brief, but just wanted to talk about the mobilization and how we prepared, how we mobilized, and really what some of the results were of the restoration efforts. And then lastly, really how we communicated to our customer base and to our community. So I think the picture here on slide 3 really tells a great story. The picture on the left, that is actually in Rapid City, just the outskirts of Rapid City on, I believe it was the third day, and that's one of our front end loaders actually trying to clear snow to get one of our trucks into one of the substations. As you got into the Black Hills, of course, higher elevations, more snow, a lot of trees down, a lot more treacherous. This was certainly the worst outage that Black Hills has ever had in our 130-year history. I've been with the company since 1990 and certainly have not seen anything of close to this magnitude. The thing that really made this outage significant for us was the leaves. It was early in the year. It was in early October. And all the leaves on the deciduous trees were still on. You couple that with, upwards of 55 inches of very wet, heavy snow, and then near hurricane force wind gusts really, really created a mess for the system, as well as took down an enormous amount of trees. As far as preparation goes, some folks might look at preparation as just a few days before the outage, but really preparation comes in days, months, and even years before the storm. You'll see the top bullet here. All these are essentially areas where we think are part of preparation. Certainly, significant maintenance and investment in the transmission and distribution system. We think those investments and that prudent maintenance of the system provided really good, even though we had 42,000 customers out, we think it provided some pretty good performance overall to the reliability of our system. Those next three bullet items where we talk about meters, our outage management system, and our mapping, I'm going to lump those into technology. Over the last several years, we've integrated a lot of technology into our system. And these three items really provided us a great opportunity to have good situational awareness out there to kind of know what was going on in the system and how significant those impacts were out there. So a fairly significant benefit for us on the situational awareness front. And you'll see a lot of these other items in regards to helping us in the preparation. Mobilizing resources, very, very critical. Days before the outage, we actually executed our emergency response plan. And you kind of see some of the areas here that we focused on. And typically, our emergency response plan, we look at, as we start executing that, we look at the severity of the storm. We hope for the best, but plan for the worst. In this case, I think we prepared for the worst and got the worst. But a lot of preparation there. Something that really helped us out in our emergency execution was these seven key support areas. Essentially, what we did is up front, we assigned leaders and groups of people to each one of these seven areas. Not to overlook anything like personnel. Yes, it's important to have personnel, the right number of personnel in the right place, but it's also really, really important to make sure that you have somebody assigned to make sure that people are being taken care of. When they need snowshoes, when the rain turns to snow, they have things to keep their feet dry. They have socks, things like that. They have meals on time. Might seem small, but when you have an event like this, when you've got people out there working really long, hard hours in difficult situations, taking care of those people, your personnel, and making sure that the morale is very high, you get a lot of productivity and a lot of pride and a lot of good things that come out of that. So even the little things made a big difference. Crews, equipment, materials prepared for in advance. Again, something we did prior to the storm. Matter of fact, we had the storm hit on Friday, October 4th, in four force, continued on Saturday. By Saturday, we actually had some out-of-state crews actually staged on the outskirts of the Black Hills area, essentially ready to converge on the system and start restoration operations along with our crews as soon as we could get in to get in the areas that were cleared. Looking at, you'll see there's a lot of transportation coordination. Again, something not to take for granted, to try to get crews in from out of state. The other states don't understand the urgency that we necessarily have to get crews through way stations and through checkpoints. So, and then lastly, we had a lot of equipment we brought to bear on the situation. One thing that was very beneficial in this case was helicopters. We had a couple helicopters running most of the days during daylight hours, and the benefit of that is up in the Black Hills, when we had such substantial amount of snow, it was important for us to be able to get in, make those real-time assessments, know what we would need for equipment, material, manpower, and already start planning and having those forces ready to go out and restore the power there. And then lastly, all employees, not just Black Hills Power employees, but Black Hills Corporation employees, it was an all hands on deck. So it was very common to have someone who may have been in their previous life or previous week a manager of human resources or a asset manager to actually out delivering meals or out parts and equipment for our crews. So everybody really came together to help where help was needed. So take a look at the outage statistics here. This is from one of our electronic systems, and it shows where our outages peaked at about 42,000 and then tapered off dramatically in the days following. I think this shows the significant amount of outages initially and the progress of the crew supporting that. Taking a look at, what did we have for resources? I already talked about the Black Hills Corp and Black Hills Power employees. If you look at those next two bullets there on our external crews, you'll see we had definitely a lot of tree trimming crews. And in this case, something on an outage like this, it's important to get, we found it was important to get crews. You might not know exactly what crews you're going to need, and you might guess wrong, but getting those crews coming sooner rather than later is really, really important. And historically, when we, over the last 10 or 15 years, when we've responded to outage, we've used our internal crews. We've been able to successfully restore outages without external folks. In this case, we had about four times the amount of contract crews as compared to our internal crews. So it was bringing a lot of people in. And, of course, when you bring a lot of people in, you have a lot of people that you actually have to try to manage. You just can't bring them in and forget about the leadership and the management and attacking the storm. So a lot of outside crews, and again, something very, very new for us, bringing that magnitude in. And then lastly, you'll see the amount of man hours that were worked on here, and then just some stats. And then, of course, we were fairly proud that we got through this storm without any major safety incidences. Safety was something that we focused on multiple times a day. We continued to take lessons learned from one day and apply them to a lot of our strategic meetings the following days to make sure that we were constantly learning from things that could go wrong to make sure that they didn't go wrong. And then staying connected. This is something that I don't know if it goes without saying, but this is something that any outage we can do a marvelous job at outage restoration. But if we fail in this area, we've as far as the customers goes, we failed in every other area. And this was something that we had a team that focused specifically on community outreach. And I'm not going to go through all the bullets, but you'll see some of the things that we did. One thing I did want to highlight was our social media. This was the first outage where we've used social media. And it worked quite well. We had a team of three people that's all they did is sat around a computer day in and day out and took care of our social media and our Facebook site. The benefits that the social media provided for us was really twofold. Yes, it allowed us, actually it was threefold. First, it allowed us to communicate in a different means to our customers. A lot of them, even though their power was out, they had these smartphones that they would be able to get information on. So we were able to provide information, but also we were able to get what we call situational awareness or intelligence or customer sentiment by the comments we were making. So then in turn, we were able to take that information and do something with it, respond to it, and then communicate back how we responded to it. One of it was updating some of our outage maps in a different way. And then the third thing that did is we had hundreds and hundreds of these comments that our customers would provide. Well, we took those and we had them in our operation centers across the Black Hills, and even in our customer service center, we had those plastered up on the wall. So when the employees would get up and maybe just feel frustrated or tired and just keep, you know, trying to keep going, they would see those comments, and it was kind of a good way to connect our employees with how well they were really, I mean, what the impact they were really making to the customer. So that worked out pretty well. And then lastly, not on here, but we provided updates as well to the commission and the state as well. Some customer response here. These are just some metrics that we have on the bottom on website views and Facebook likes and so forth. But customer issues or concerns, these are the things that customers are really interested in. And of course, ETR is important. Customers always want to know when is their power going to be on. And sometimes getting that ETR down to a minute or an hour a day is challenging when you're struggling even to go out and review your system. But, you know, they want to know where the crews are. If their power's out, they physically want to be able to see Black Hills Power contractor crews out. And if they're not, they don't see anything, then, you know, they think there's an issue that we're not working or not out there. They're at it. So, some ideas here. And then, actually, I was going to go back to that next slide. This is just one area. You'll see this picture up to the right-hand corner. This is just an example of some of the Facebook printouts that we put up in the operation centers. Then, lastly, taking a look at, you know, what are some final thoughts. You know, first off, we've spent an enormous amount of time doing after action reviews with a lot of stakeholders, a lot of people to make sure we take all the lessons learned from this and apply it and update our new outage procedure, so we're ready to do even better the next time. Just some of the final thoughts here. You know, coordination of first responders in early stages makes a difference. When you have something like this, we can't do it by ourselves. We got to team up, as an example, snow plows with our crews to make sure that the plowing priorities that the state or the city or the county have are aligned with us, with ours, and they're very much willing to do that. That works out well. So making sure that the coordination happens early and often, and little things like, do they have enough fuel, isn't it just little important details. Company resources, mutual aid agreements. You're aware that we've had mutual aid agreements. Those came into play, and we certainly executed on those. And then within about 6 days, we had 95% of the customers responded, and after about 10 days, we had 99% of our customers back in service. With that 1% most of those we were waiting for the electricians to fix the mass and things like that. So was us waiting to go in and get the power restored to the individual customer. So, but again, it was nice to see the community come together, not just in support of Black Hills Power, but in support of all the other people that were hurting and suffering and had issues and collapsed buildings and businesses. So neat to see, you know, everybody's not going to be happy, but, you know, the majority of people came together to help, you know, people helping people. So nice to see in South Dakota. So at that, I will open it to questions.
Thank you. I appreciate that presentation greatly. And I'm going to open it. Chairman Hansen, any questions? Gary, if you're speaking, I'm not hearing.
If you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Great. No, I don't have any questions. That was an excellent presentation. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Commissioner Feagin, questions?
First of all, I want to thank Black Hills Power for keeping our team involved and not only involved, but I guess mostly informed. It was very nice to get emails about 2 to 3 times a day on your progress. You're 1%. I know sometimes those are the difficult people. You serve an area that people live in interesting places in the hills. And do we ever inform those people that live in interesting areas that can't get internet, really can't get cell phones and et cetera, that sometimes their electricity will take a while to get back on and they should maybe think about that when a storm arises, or how long does it take sometimes? I know the 10 days you had 99%, but how long did it take to get all of them restored?
Yeah, all of them. Well, first off, the communications on employee or customers that live out in those very rural areas, They typically have a good understanding that if there's a significant storm that moves through, they're gonna be delayed in getting power for sometimes days, if not weeks. And even some of the minor outages, smaller outages that have occurred, Commissioner, over the last 10 or 15 years, they've been out for days. So most of the time they are prepared. There's a lot of communications during the storm and after the storm with those customers. In regards to the last customer, we still have some remote seasonal customers that are out of service, and that service is that last line to their house, and we are waiting for them to get back to fix their mass. But in a lot of these cases, they're not, you know, they'll get to it when they want to get to it, and there's, you know, they feel that there's no concern with them not having power. So the timing is based a lot on when they get their mast fixed.
Thank you, Mr. Crocker, and we certainly appreciate everything you've done, and thank you so much for coming to us and giving us a presentation on your results, and that you talked also about what you did at the end, and you did feedback and tried to learn lessons for the next time, hopefully 130 years from now.
Yes, hopefully more than that.
Thank you. Just a couple of quick questions. You mentioned bringing these crews in from out of state and going through way stations. Did you encounter any difficulty coming through South Dakota way stations?
No, typically what it is, I'll give you an example. The point of entry coming into Wyoming, from Montana into Wyoming, there is a utility, Northwestern actually, from Montana. They came in and they were, we knew there was going to be some concern. At the time, there wasn't a state of emergency declared yet. So we made contact with that actually with the Highway Patrol and then with the way station. And the concern was they don't have registrations for South Dakota, or excuse me, from Wyoming, because they're coming in from Montana to Wyoming. So it's trying to figure out ways that we can accommodate them, they can accommodate us, and get them through. And a lot of times, commissioners, it's just if you can convey the urgency and the significance of what it is, they're usually willing to do whatever it takes and take that extra effort to wave them through. And in this case, it took a lot of pushing and prodding, but at the end of the day, at 9 o'clock at night, they were sailing through that way station and on their way to Gillette, Wyoming.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And obviously, in the future, if you ever have issues like that where you think we can be of assistance, we're more than happy to try to do that. In the analysis afterwards, and Deb Gregg's going to know why I'm asking this question, have you looked at any particular segments of your lines where it might make some economical sense to actually underground them?
We have not got to the point yet where, you know, we've done an analysis of looking at, you know, underground versus overhead. I guess one consideration we made is the, you know, we have had these discussions, but it, you know, comes down to what is the cost to the consumer for, you know, to eliminate some of those outages every 1 in 20, 1 in 50, 1 in 100 years compared to minimizing those costs and just prudently, you know, building and maintaining the system as it is. In this case, you know, we did have a lot of those outages on that, you know, those last 20, 50, 100 yards right to the customer house with 68,000 customers. If you were to look at putting a lot of that underground, it gets very expensive very quickly.
Certainly, thank you. And I did emphasize the word economical in that, and that's certainly what we expect. I would reemphasize what Commissioner Feagin said about the job that you all did communicating with us. We greatly appreciated those multiple updates daily so that we knew where things were at. I know I was following your Facebook activities, and that was also very helpful for me. And matter of fact, I've used your example of use of Facebook as I've talked to other utilities in South Dakota and said, during that time of crisis, I thought Black Hills Power did a marvelous job with their Facebook effort in keeping folks up to date, and I think is a model that other utilities can use around the state if they ever find themselves in that same situation. With that, I think before we go to staff, maybe if you want to just go into the decommissioning issue, and we'll work through that, and then turn it to staff.
You know, Commissioner, one thing I was going to do is I was just going to hand these little pamphlets out. This is something we actually made for our employees and the contractors that supported the outage, just to kind of memorialize what they did and just to kind of hang on their bulletin board, share with their family. So I have a few copies of this. I'll just lay it up here, and you all are happy to.
Chris, could I ask one more question?
Absolutely.
I noticed in your filing that it appeared that there were no outages or no costs allocated, and I know that we'll talk about this maybe more in the rate case, to Wyoming. Did Wyoming not get hit at all, or your customers?
That is correct. We had about 380 customers out in Wyoming for a short period of time. It was about 2 man hours to restore that outage. In Wyoming.
Okay, so very limited expenses.
Very, very small.
Okay, go ahead and proceed on the decommissioning issue.
Thank you. This is Chris Gilpatrick for Black Hills Power. As I was thinking about this, it's kind of hard to believe this process started way back in 2011 with Black Hills Power when we began the IRP process to look at replacing these plants when they begin to retire. That IRP identified the capacity needed to replace these assets. Some of these assets range from over 60 years old to over 40 years old and have served Black Hills Power customers, you know, really good over that time period. When the EPA issued the new environmental rules for these plants, it became uneconomical to continue to operate those when these rules go into effect in March of 2014, which is just right around the corner. And we are here today to request an accounting order related to the decommissioning costs for these plants. The decommissioning costs were developed based on an RFP process that we went through here in the previous year for outside consultants. Based on these RFPs, a contractor was selected to decommission these plants. The decommissioning of these plants will take the existing generating facilities and basically take them down to ground and take any of the spare parts associated with these plants as well and dispose of them also. So as a result of these EPA rules, you know, we still have some assets on our books from a financial statement purpose left. And so what we are here today is requesting that those assets that are still on our books from a Black Hills Power perspective be moved into a regulatory asset account with which then we can address those costs in our next rate case that we'll be filing yet this year. Certainly we appreciate the quick turnaround that has been done on this docket. We know we filed it not too long ago. Staff has been very accommodating on working through this and getting through these issues, and we look forward to resolving these issues in the rate case that we'll file here in the next few months.
Thank you. Commissioner Hansen, any questions?
No, thank you very much. And I did very much appreciate the, well, I guess I do have one question, and that is on the intent of this docket. It's basically an accounting docket more than a legal matter, and it does not place the commission in a position where we are required to, or we are in any way sending a message of a future position by the commission. I want the applicants to understand that.
And Chris, if you'd just respond to that.
Sure. Yeah. In our application, we are purely requesting these assets, you know, and the associated spare parts be moved into a regulatory asset at this point in time. We realize that, you know, we'll have to go through it during the rate case to figure out what or how much those dollars may be recoverable in the future. But at this point, just pushing them to a regulatory asset account.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Feagin, questions?
Really a curiosity question. Do your contractors ever sell any of the equipment that they're decommissioning? Because as you know, the internet, who knows what's true or not, but sometimes it's said that those things are sold to different countries.
My understanding on the process they'll be using is they can do with what they want with the equipment. They're basically taking the responsibility to dispose of it, and if they can find a market to sell some of those parts, they can do that. Most of it's going to be probably for scrap value, just considering the age of most of those facilities. Within the bids that we did, they gave us basically a fixed amount that they're going to give us from a salvage value, and that helped bring the price down. And so they're going to take the risk if the market isn't at that level at this point. So we're pretty sheltered from that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I have no questions on this portion of it, so we'll turn to staff. Ms. Malhoff.
Thank you. This is Brittany Malhoff for staff. Rather than reading this all to you again, I will just refer to our staff memo for our recommendations, including the two conditions. And then I would just ask Mr. Kilpatrick if we need to add additional language to include the spare parts.
You know, as we've been looking at it, you know, in our application, we did not say specifically related to the spare parts. But as you know, we went through this. You know, there are spare parts still left at these facilities. They're not classified as property, plant, and equipment, but as inventory on our financial statements. And so we would, you know, request that those spare part inventory amounts would also be part of that regulatory asset that then would also be part of the rate case going forward and how we would handle it there.
Thank you. Any other questions for either of the parties from anybody? If not, is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Feagin.
In EL 13-036, move that the commission allow BHP to use insurance for costs incurred as a result of the Winter Storm Atlas and authorize Black Hills Power to transfer the remaining plant balances of the soon-to-be-commissioned three plants to a regulatory asset, including the spare parts inventory.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all of those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you very much for coming. I appreciate your presentation and your time this morning. With that, we will move into some territory dockets, EL 13-037, in the matter of the request for approval of an electric service territory boundary agreement between Howard Municipal Electric and Northern States Power, DBA XL. Mr. Henry.
Thank you. This is David Henry with staff. This is just the continuation of the GIS project that we're working on here at the PUC. Both companies have signed the agreement. And staff recommends full approval.
Thank you. I don't see anybody on the line for Howard Municipal. Mr. Pauly, anything to add for XL?
Nope. I think we're good on this end. We support staff.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Hearing none, is there a motion?
Chair, I'll move that in EL 13-037 that the Commission approve the proposed electric service territory boundary agreement.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. We'll move to EL 13-039 in the matter of the request for approval of electric service territory boundary agreement between Central Electric Cooperative, Inc. and Rosebud Electric Cooperative, Inc. Mr. Henry.
Same as the last docket, just the continuation of the project. Both have signed and agreed.
Very good. Mr. Clayton, anything to add?
Nope, it's a done deal.
Very close to being a done deal anyway. Mr. Noss, anything to add?
Nothing to add. Agree.
Thank you, Lauren. Is there a motion? I will move in EL 13-039 that the Commission approve the proposed electric service territory boundary agreement. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. EL 13-040. In the matter of the request for approval of electric service territory boundary agreement between Central Electric and Howard Municipal Electric. Mr. Henry.
Just another boundary with the GIS project. Both companies have signed and agreed.
Perfect. Staff, thank you. Mr. Noss, anything to add?
Nope, agree with it.
Very good. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, or Vice Chairman. In EL 13-040, move that the Commission approve the proposed electric service territory boundary agreement.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. EL 13-041, in the matter of the request for approval of electric service territory boundary agreement between Central Electric Cooperative and Dakota Energy Cooperative. Mr. Henry.
Same as the last three. Both have signed and agreed.
Excellent. Mr. Noss, anything to add?
Nope. Agree.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
Move for approval. EL 13-041, the Commission approved the proposed electric service territory boundary agreement.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Fegan.
Fegan votes aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. I want to thank all the parties that were involved in pulling that together. Four dockets in one day, that's good progress. Thank you, Mr. Henry. That brings us to Natural Gas 12-008 in the matter of the application of Montana Dakota Utilities Company for authority to increase its natural gas rates. Mr. Kenneke is approaching, and I know we have Tammy Aberle on the line. Mr. Kenneke.
Thank you, Commissioner Nelson. Good morning, Commissioners and staff. Brett Kenneke from PIER, appearing for Montana Dakota Utilities. Briefly, we're seeking the Commission's consideration and amendment to the order regarding the refund plan. Tammy can elaborate further as to why that Black Hills Power plan was going to be difficult and time-consuming, and I'll allow her to do that. but we're simply asking that the commission would consider that the refund methodology in the Excel file referenced in my motion would be appropriate.
Thank you. Tammy, go ahead.
Commissioner, thank you. As Mr. Kennecke mentioned, the Black Hills methodology, as we understand it, would require some significant time and expense to implement on our system. The Excel methodology employed in their last rate case does provide for a bill credit amount based on the interim refund factor, including the interest at 7%, as applied to the interim amount paid by each customer. And so that methodology, Montana, Dakota, can implement on a timely basis and is actually reflective of how we collected the interim amounts from customers, which was based on a percentage of bill. So as with the Excel plan, the refund amounts of $3 or more owed to customers that have left the system will be refunded via check, and amounts less than $3 owed to customers will be credited to the gas cost true-up account. We're close to the final numbers here, and it appears that the residential refund on average will equate to approximately $290 per customer. But again, that would be based, the actual credit will be based on what each customer paid to us through the interim application. So we request this reconsideration in order to efficiently get these dollars back to the customers. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll turn to staff. Ms. Edwards.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Kristen Edwards for staff. Staff has no objection to MDU's request, and staff would be available for questions.
Thank you. I'm going to start with a question for Tammy. And Tammy, I went through both the Excel and the Black Hills dockets to try to figure out what the real difference was, and obviously there's some hitch in the Black Hills methodology for you all. Can you explain to me what the difference is?
Commissioner, my understanding is Black Hills actually recalculated the revenues that would be collected under final rate. So that was calculated on their system by customer account, whereas the Excel methodology and the methodology we're proposing to implement, we would basically say we should have collected X amount of interim dollars based on the final authorized total revenue requirement, and that is equated to an interim refund factor. So for Montana, Dakota today, that amount would be approximately 42%. So we would look at each customer account, and we know how much interim was paid by each customer by customer account, and we would say 42% of that should be refunded to you. And so we would refund that as a credit balance, as a credit adjustment to their bill.
So
I think that ultimately the result probably, and I don't know because I haven't applied the Black Hills methodology, Black Hills methodology would also, when you have rate design changes, would not apply that interim the same way that we collected the interim. But I'm not entirely sure how Black Hills collected their interim, but the way that we collected the interim was a percentage increase was applied to equally to the distribution component. So that's how the customers would be receiving this money back.
Thank you. I appreciate that explanation. And my sense is that at the end of the day, you're probably going to end up with very, very close to the same answer, just using the methodology that you're more comfortable with and can actually execute more readily. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
Thank you. Questions from the other commissioners. Commissioner Hansen. Commissioner Fegan.
I had the same question of Commissioner Nelson. I think the commission just wanted a method that, I know our motion was about Black Hills, but I think either method is similar to ratepayers, and ratepayers are going to get paid back the way we wanted it. And I apologize personally because I didn't think you would have to come back for that, but I'm glad, I guess you did, to ask us, but hopefully next time you won't have to come back.
Thank you. Any other questions from staff here? Seeing none, is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll move that in NG 12-008 that the commission amend its December 9th, 2013 order and approve the refund plan as presented by NBU.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Brett. Thank you, Tammy.
Thank you.
That brings us to the South Dakota One Call dockets. OC 13-010, 015, 016, and 017. These were Northwestern Energy complaints filed against CenturyLink, alleging that CenturyLink did not locate within the time period required by South Dakota law. And I think, Larry Janes, have you joined us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes. Would you like to take this initially, or do we want to go to Ms. Edwards?
Either one. I can start off. Thank you, Kristen Edwards, for staff. The commission did receive a check from CenturyLink on January 3rd, 2014, that payment would resolve all issues in these dockets. So commission or staff would ask that the commission close these dockets.
Thank you. Ms. Melissa Baruth, are you on the line from Northwestern?
Yes, I am.
Anything to add?
Northwestern is fine with what CenturyLink laid out for compliance, and if CenturyLink follows the letter that they laid out for compliance in the docket, Northwestern is thrilled with the solution.
Well, thrilled. We like that. And Mr. Carmen from CenturyLink has approached the dais, and we will turn to him next.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Just a little bit of background, if we could. This is a matter that you know, we do not like to have in front of this commission, but just a little bit of background. Last spring, we changed contractors that we utilized for cable locating, and they struggled a little bit with the volume of locates, and so they obviously fell behind. This is something that we did not anticipate and we don't like. We have taken steps to correct that. We've had several conversations with our contractor. They've hired additional staff, and I think that from the time of these incidents, we have proven that it's been corrected. We've also taken steps to prepare for the next season, and we are meeting with our contractors. We have had some meetings internally with our own staff, realizing that the amounts have been suspended on conditions, you know, since the amount has been paid in full, we still are working through those conditions as if they applied. And so we're holding those meetings with the contractors, with our own staff, and intend to do that. In addition, typically the contractors that do this type of work, when the volume drops down, they lay off or furlough employees. There'll be new ones probably added in spring, and we intend to request our meetings and education with the contractors as they add gear up additional staff. So we're very hopeful that this problem has been corrected and is behind us, and we hope that you can see your way to close the docket. Also online is our attorney, Jason Topp, and I'm not sure if, Jason, if I've covered everything, would you please take the opportunity to comment?
Yeah, I think that you've covered most everything. The only thing I'd add is one of the things we did when these complaints came out was institute monthly meetings with the contractor to make sure that we have staffed appropriately. The most recent of those was yesterday, and we will continue with that and certainly be keeping our eyes on this issue going forward.
Thank you. Mr. Janes, I apologize. I should have gone back to you after Mr. Edwards or Ms. Edwards. Do you have anything else to add?
I do. Thank you, Commissioner Nelson. Good morning, Commissioners Fegan and Hansen. This is Larry Janes, Executive Director of South Dakota One Call. With all due respect to CenturyLink, as far as everything being resolved with their locating company, I did receive information a couple days ago stating that in November, their contractor was asking for extra time in certain parts of the state to complete locates because they weren't able to get them done within 48 hours. And the other thing, I would like to make a comment about the payments. First complaint, OC-13-010, was ordered on October 16th and was due, a payment was due within 30 days. The other three, OC-13-015, 16, and 17, those were ordered on November 16th, and those payments were due December 16th. And CenturyLink was given every opportunity to resolve this before bringing this before the commission. And the complaints were against CenturyLink, and it was CenturyLink's responsibility to make sure those payments were made on time. Instead, it chose to have the contractor, the subcontractor, make the payments, and then CenturyLink didn't follow up to make sure that they were paid within the 30 days. I believe it was mishandled. And because of that, these payments were doubled in the amounts due. And the other thing is, with these late locates, I understand that that happens from time to time where a vendor is gearing up for the season, but I heard anecdotal evidence over the summer from excavators that were getting frustrated with the system, and they were getting to the point where they weren't waiting for locates. Well, that's one thing for them to not wait for the locate of CenturyLink, but I'm afraid that what may have, it may not have, but I'm afraid what it does, it drives behavior towards not waiting for any locate. And these laws really are created for the safety of workers in the general public and to prevent damage, of course, to underground facilities. I'm just concerned that it may have driven behavior the wrong way and somebody could eventually get hurt because of it. So those are my only comments. I am glad the payments were made, and it does appear that CenturyLink has made some effort to resolve the locating issues, but apparently not quite completed yet in that area. Thank you.
Thank you. And Larry, if I could just ask a question. I know there were other conditions, and Mr. Carman has alluded to that they're working on complying with the other conditions, but it's my understanding that part has not been absolutely completed, and so we can't close the dockets today. And Ms. Edwards may want to address that.
The other conditions were there was a payment between all the dockets. The fine totaled $6,500 with half of that suspended based on those conditions. If CenturyLink failed to meet any of those conditions, which included making the payment within 30 days, the entire payment was due. So once they paid the entire amount, the conditions no longer apply.
Thank you. I appreciate that clarification, and I hadn't picked up on that distinction, so I appreciate that. Mr. Carman, would you like to have one more shot at responding?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I fully understand Mr. Jane's concerns, and we will be addressing these things and looking very, very closely at this in the future. You know, the whole situation I feel is rather embarrassing to us, and I hope you can tell by my red face that that's the case. We are very committed to the safety of everybody involved with these types of things. We know that, you know, our lines are in close proximity to power lines, and all these things must be taken care of before anybody can go ahead and excavate and those type of things. So we, as maybe a further explanation, I believe that the reason that CenturyLink did not come forward and pay that fine is because of the terms of our contract holding the subcontractor responsible for all fines and omissions and neglect of the not abiding by the law. But I don't have that contract with me, so I'm not sure about that. But I hope that Mr. James does not think this is anything in personal against the One Call Board, and certainly we respect their authority with full degree. But I'm very hopeful that this is behind us. We will be watching it closely.
Thank you. And the one comment I would make, you begin by saying, this is not the kind of issue you want to come before the commission on. And I can assure you from a commission's perspective, when we have two very reputable South Dakota companies, this is not the kind of issue we like to have brought before us. But when push comes to shove and we need to get a resolution, then it is appropriate to be here and make sure that we get a resolution, hopefully get everybody on the right plane going forward. Questions from the other commissioners? Again, I'll just give another shot. Commissioner Hansen.
Thank you. I'm curious, pertaining to the three dockets that occurred on that the incidents that occurred on July 17th and were all in Mitchell, if we could be given some idea as to, was this, I know they're different addresses, but how are they related, or are they not?
This is Melissa for Northwestern. I can answer that if you would like.
Please proceed.
They're not related. What we wanted to show was a pattern of abuse on the 48-hour. And so in visiting with Larry, what I decided was the best approach in filing the complaints was to file multiple complaints that showed that CenturyLink had created a pattern or created an actual process because they had so many issues that were outside of the 48 hours or so many locates that they were not completing outside of the 48 hours. So that's why I filed them separately, because if you'll see in the Redfield docket, I filed them all together and they weren't addressed separately. They were clumped together. So therefore, in the Mitchell docket, I did file them separately.
Thank you. That's what I was curious about. Appreciate your answer.
Mr. Vice Chair, this is Jason Topp. Could I respond to that?
Certainly, Jason.
Thank you. Well, from Northwestern's perspective, these might not be related. From our perspective, they were. We had a USIC technician in Mitchell suffer a medical emergency that required hospitalization and it prevented him from being able to use his cell phone. And so there was USIC wasn't aware of it, the issue, and he was unable to contact Northwestern. As soon as USIC discovered the situation, it investigated whether the outstanding Mitchell tickets had been completed, dispatched a technician from Sioux Falls, and then, contacted excavators regarding the past due tickets. So, certainly these were not completed on time, but there was a unique situation associated with all of these tickets.
Thank you, Jason and Melissa. I appreciate both those comments, and I think we understand the distinction there and have an idea of what transpired. Commissioner Feagin, any questions?
First of all, I think all three commissioners, all of us probably looked at this when it came in July because, like Commissioner Nelson said, we have three very quality utilities in South Dakota that have a complaint against each other. A couple things. Of course, we're disappointed about the timeliness. And not only the timeliness of the locate, but the timeliness of the payment. And so that's disappointing that you have our staff and our commission work on this when it is your contract issue. We're just looking at the law. And CenturyLink is responsible for this. If we don't care about your contract, we want to just make sure you obey the law and you're timely. So I'm disappointed about that. Also, I understand that there was a medical emergency in July. Is it my understanding that this has happened before and there wasn't a complaint? So that's why a complaint finally was submitted?
And just so we can be clear about the question you're asking, had this type of thing happened before in Mitchell?
In CenturyLink service area in South Dakota.
Ms. Baruth, would you like to respond to that?
Yes, it had. And I highlight that in my complaint, where I believe if you look at the Redfield complaint and you look at the Mitchell complaints, where I highlight that we had taken multiple avenues to visit with CenturyLink's home office before going to the extreme of filing a complaint.
Commissioner Feagin, correct. Go ahead.
So thank you. So although there was a medical emergency in some of these complaints, there are several things that haven't been filed that there wasn't medical emergencies. So like we're hearing, there was a pattern. Also, the disappointment was that the locate tickets, and I'm not on the one call board, but just things I read, that it had misinformation on it. And it stated information that I believe somebody was contacted and there was an automatic generation of a locate ticket and they never talked to the person. So that's disappointing also. But thank you for coming today, and I appreciate that you're going to get this resolved and you're committed to making this better.
Thank you. Any other questions from any of the staff here? Seeing none, is there a motion? I will move in OC 13-010, 015, 016, and 017 that the commission dismiss the dockets because payment has been made. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Brings us to telecommunications, TC 13-136, in the matter of the application of a wireline adoption interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation, DBA CenturyLink, and Envoy. Mr. Topp, you're not on this one.
Happy to be. We made the filing, and we're asking the agreement be approved.
Ms. Bewley from Envoy, are you on the line? Not hearing any response there. Staff.
Thank you. Kristen Edwards for staff. The agreement was properly filed, properly executed, and does not appear to contain any discriminatory provisions. No comments were filed. Staff recommends approval.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Hearing none, is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll move that in TC 13-136 that the commission approve the adoption of the interconnection agreement.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. That brings us to the last item on the agenda, our annual election of the leadership for the Public Utilities Commission. We are going to elect a chairperson and a vice chairperson. We are going to begin with the election of a chairperson, and I am going to cede the floor to myself to nominate Gary Hansen as our chairperson for 2014. Simply would say that I greatly appreciate Gary's experience, his demeanor, and greatly appreciate working with him at the commission. He's done a fine job of leading the commission over the last year, and I look forward to his leadership in 2014. Are there other nominations for chair? Hearing none, is there a motion to close nominations and cast a ballot for Gary Hansen for chair?
Move to close nominations and cast a ballot for Chairman Hansen.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion.
I'll just say that I recorded every word that you just said, and I'm going to be using that in the future.
That works. I'm okay with that. Thank you.
And I was not able to get my yard signs into the ground because of the weather, but appreciate it very much. Thank you guys for the confidence you placed in me. I appreciate that.
You are welcome. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. Gary Hansen is the chairperson for the commission for 2014. Brings us to the point of election of the vice chairperson for 2014. Are there any nominations?
Mr. Chair, I would like to nominate Chris Nelson as the vice chair for 2014. I believe that you have acquitted yourself remarkably and on a national level and on a local level. Very impressed with your abilities and the studiousness that you have what you've accomplished, and especially in the telecommunications arena. Congratulations on the chairmanship on a national level. That's going to be extremely beneficial to the state of South Dakota, and it's not just a little feather in your cap. It's a very, very important position. I appreciate working with both you and Christy. It's been a real good experience to this juncture.
Thank you, Commissioner Hansen. Are there other nominations for vice chair? Hearing none, is there a motion to close nominations and cast a unanimous ballot for Chris Nelson for vice chair?
Move to close nominations and cast a unanimous ballot for Vice Chairman Nelson.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Feagin.
Feagin votes aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And Nelson votes aye. Motion carries. That brings us to the end of our agenda. Just a couple of announcements. Looks like some of the commissioners will be attending a Mid-America Regulatory Commissioners Retreat the end of this week in Austin, Texas. Commissioners and staff will be at South Dakota Ag Expo next week in Sioux Falls. And our next, commission will be meeting with some representatives from Northwestern Energy on January 22nd at the Floyd Matthews Building for a company update. Anything else for the good of the order? Hearing none, is there a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Move to adjourn. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Commissioner Feagin.